You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
You're listening to episode number 16 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman, and with me, like a bad case of Kandorian plague, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler!
Hello, everyone. Apparently, I'm another illness this week. I'm waiting for the one that gives you diarrhea. I'm good. How you doing, Mark?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. They kicked off this new energy drink down in my hometown, the Dutch Brothers Blue Rebel. I joined the rebellion today.
Very nice. And it's a blue rebellion, so it needs to be off-color humor, I suppose. Or perhaps this is a rebellion made up of Smurfs, maybe?
Yeah, our local high school colors are blue and white. I'm pretty sure that's where they were going with it, because it's like the equivalent of Starbucks, but it started out here in Grants Pass and is moving out like a Rakgul plague of its own.
Nice. Well, you know that with Star Wars, most of the time, you only have the one female heroic character. So you got Leia in the classics, and you've got Padme in the prequels, at least until Ahsoka came along. Now with Ahsoka, you sort of have her as the main one of the Clone Wars. It makes sense. A Smurfette can be your rebel hero. All right, now, folks, you may be listening to us through your iPod. You can also listen to our show airing on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as on the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes are also available on our own Facebook page, which you can find at SWBeyondFilms, facebook.com/SWBeyondFilms, or just type in Star Wars Beyond the Films in the search bar. No matter how you got here, though, we'd like you to come and like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter, same name, SWBeyondFilms. These are some of the best ways to interact with us. You can post comments while you listen to the show and have your voice heard. Each month, we'll be releasing our feedback episodes where we answer your emails and your messages. So if you have something to say about an episode, fire it off. We'd love to hear from you.
That's true. In fact, our first feedback episode should be kicking off before this episode airs. So, you know, if you liked that, let us know. You know, that's a new direction we decided to take. Kind of like an added bonus on your DVD and Blu-ray player disc, you know, just a little addition to the feed. I believe the first one came off Wednesday, what was it, the 25th or so? 25th, the 5th or so? I can't even remember. My days are all messed up now that Jane is in my life. Speaking of, real fast, I wanted to mention that. Did you happen to check out the picture I put up of her with the lightsaber? Is that just not awesome?
That was very cool. I was like, yep, this is nice. Now, did I tell you how I proposed? I know I mentioned the proposal thing with the little Yoda there. So, you know, we've got this whole Star Wars invading the life thing, which is funny because we were just talking before we recorded here that both of us tonight, once the recording is over with, are going to be dealing with new bookshelves for all the Star Wars books. I got to go buy one. He's got to set one up. So it's very pervasive.
It's funny, too, because when you said it, I'm sitting here and I was just taking him doing measurements because I've got two spots I can put it in. Because with Jaina's little crib and bassinet set up, there's like very limited space anymore. And I've got piles of books sitting around that I needed to put in a bigger shelf. The one on my wall only holds the paperbacks. So I'm like, I need to do something. I really need to do something. And now I'm like moving stacks of stuff everywhere. It's like, all right, time to come and get a shelf.
Yeah, I've got four book towers plus another one that I thought was going to be a book tower. It's actually more like a bookshelf that's like twice the width of a regular book tower. And now I'm probably going to need another one of those because of some of these big boxed ones like Book of Sith, you know, so I'm going to take down my Garibaldi and Bester signed picture from Babylon 5. I got to take down my signed season 1 cast picture from 24, take those and just put them in with my other signed stuff and clear out that wall space because now there's going to be a big old bookshelf there. It's going to be like nothing but bookshelf and DVD shelves lining my my dining room. Thank goodness I don't eat in there or they'd get all messy.
Yeah, no doubt.
Which assumes well, I guess a food fight.
That'll be something we'll have to talk about some other time. I mean, we've got pictures of our bookshelves and stuff like that on our Facebook page, and I know we've got a couple topics that center around bookshelves and collections, so that'll be a topic for those of you interested. Be sure to let us know that you want to see that. We might move it up in our line of episodes. Speaking of episodes, this episode, here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you for a long, long time. Or simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we ask, is Star Wars viable with non-film characters, EU-only characters? And is the EU viable going forward if the primary characters of new publications are not characters from the films or series? For example, can Star Wars Universe, if it focuses on a different generation of non-film characters in their stories, and thus the marketing? So, and Nathan, I know you had a really strong desire to tackle this one yourself. I mean, was there anything specifically that came to mind for you when this topic came up?
Well, you know, I mean, we've spent time talking about stuff like the saga versus setting, and we talked about the whole idea of how there's sort of, within the Star Wars setting now, there's all these sort of mini sagas, like the Old Republic era, Knights of the Old Republic era, Legacy era, all that, you know, with those repetitive cycles of Jedi versus Sith, which we did in the show. And just in the process of thinking about all of that, it brought up that same issue that seems like it's been plaguing things for a while. Even in our cramming episode, it fit into that. Just this idea that Star Wars has kind of gotten to a point where we've almost run our main film characters ragged, especially the classic trilogy characters, and we're now into eras that are so far flung from the films, and we're in new genres of storytelling, like horror novels and stuff, that are somewhat removed from the film characters unless they shoehorn Han and Chewie into yet another one. It's almost like Star Wars is trying to branch out beyond those because they realize that so much ground has already been covered. Yet at the same time, they've got to keep this a viable franchise. Not just for the ones who've been reading it for a long time, but they've got to keep it viable for new people to come in and get hooked into Star Wars. Otherwise, eventually the franchise dies. So not any one specific thing, so much as just, you know, how are they going to fix this conundrum that they're dealing with? How do you tell stories that fit with so much already told and yet still remain attractive to brand new fans?
Well, you know, I would say that we got some projects out that are tackling this. I mean, with Tor, the online multi-massive player, whatever you want to call it, the MMO.
The Morpho.
Yes, exactly. The game that's out there that everyone's hyping about that I can't wait to play someday myself, if ever, because I never got to play Galaxy. But you've got that right there that's prime for, you know, new characters that we've never heard about. You know, you don't have to jump into the comics here. You can just play a game and kind of figure out who these characters are. And we've got books that are starting to chronicle that. We've got Jaden Kor, you know, a character that also came from games. And that's another thing. Is it just that most of these new characters that we actually are seeing are ways to tie the gaming community in? I mean, because that does seem to be, you know, Karan Horn is a character that readily comes to mind, of favorite characters of mine that I love every time they chronicle him. I'm reading Apocalypse right now. Minor spoiler warning. His character is featured prominently, as are his children, and I'm absolutely loving this. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, if they do go forward in that direction of starting to focus on newer characters that aren't Han, Luke, and Leia, that they're doing a good job of kind of giving the ball to these other characters, at least in Apocalypse. But, you know, I think about which series was it with Ferris Olin? The Last of the Jedi. That series was another good one that had characters that, you know, tied with some of the movies to a sense, but for the most part were completely EU characters. And for me, that's a lot of fun. I mean, you don't have to necessarily have the characters. And then you also have the other side of it where people complain, like, say, Shadow Games, where they stuck Han in it. And, you know, for the whole thing, and people are like, well, why is Han here? You know, the story could have been better. That, you know, we've talked about on another episode. But I think, you know, you have that other side of it where by adding those characters, you kind of cheat these EU-only characters that are trying to have their own limelight. Like, you almost feel like, well, we can't really float this story without having one of the big three in there.
See, when I think about the issue, I mean, I'm taken back to about 1996. And, you know, I got into the EU around 92. We've talked about that before. Dark Force Rising was the newest novel out at the time that I got into it. And even then, back during the Bantam era and the early version of the Dark Horse era, I mean, we were dealing with questions of, wait a second, can they do that? When it came to stuff like the X-Wing novels. You know, X-Wing Rogue Squadron, the first book by Michael Stackpole, not the comic series, was a huge deal because, whoa, wait a second. Yes, Wedge is a film character, but he's not played out particularly prominently. I mean, he's grown in the EU and grown as a character by leaps and bounds since the X-Wing books. I mean, broadly speaking, he was a minor character, and a lot of people are like, wait, Wedge who? Most people don't even realize that you got different actors playing the character. So we've got Wedge spearheading the X-Wing Rogue Squadron book, and the X-Wing series grows by leaps and bounds as it goes along. It creates a lot of memorable characters. And the same thing could be said for the Young Jedi Knights books and the Junior Jedi Knights books that kind of went along with it by Richardson and Moesta. But those books, it was the same thing. Whoa, wait a second. Even if these are the teenage children of Han and Leia, plus their friends, their classmates at the Academy, and Luke is involved, and Han and Leia are involved at times, you know, can you do this? Can you build off of that generation of characters? In both of those cases, the skepticism was huge. It was a lot of, it was like fingers crossed, hoping that these would play out. And they did well within the broader EU. But I'm not sure that, I mean, just looking at it from a Star Wars perspective, I'd love to see the sales numbers to say whether or not they succeeded as book series in and of themselves as compared to something like the Thrawn trilogy or the Jedi Academy trilogy or anything else comparable of that time period where they were either adult novels or younger reader books, where which there really weren't many of, at least not in the junior or not in the Young Jedi Knights vein. There were quite a few in the Junior Jedi Knights vein. But I'd love to see some numbers to see how well that worked as far as grabbing new readers. Same thing with something like, say, Shadow Games that focuses on Dash Rendar. How would that compare to something like some of the Fate of the Jedi books, despite the criticism of those? Because at least those have Luke, have Han, have Leia, and have them in a prominent role. I would say that the best example of this going forward right now is Scourge by Jeff Grubb. I'm a big-time Star Wars fan. I read everything, and I could care less about this book, at least at the time that we're recording this, when the book's not out, because I know nothing about these characters. I know nothing about this author. There's nothing to draw me to this book. And if I'm not excited about a new author entering Star Wars and these new characters getting a limelight, how is someone who's not into Star Wars at all, just starting to dabble in it, going to give a crap? That's what I'm concerned about. The viability for new people coming in. We've seen the experiment succeed for EU fans, like Young Jedi Knights, like X-Wing. But what about the mainstream sci-fi reader?
Well, you know, you bring up points, because like the Tales books, a lot of those stories, when I first read them, I was like, I don't care. I at that time, I really wanted to know about the big three. I was like, this is not them. What the heck's going on? And yet, at the same time, I discovered Coran Horn. That was where I finally discovered awesomeness wrapped up in a really cool Carillion man who was Corsec, come Jedi later on. And, you know, I found myself really enjoying that series of books. But when it came to the Tales of stories, not every one of them struck me as something I enjoyed. It was very hit or miss. And I think, you know, you're right in that aspect of Scourge. I'm not really like, woo, because I don't know enough about it yet. But part of that is because I don't want to spoil myself too much. I want to wait till it kind of comes a little closer. But then I think about Red Harvest. That was another book that had nobody new to it. It's kind of set in its own little era on its own, and I really enjoyed that. I mean, I think it can be done. It can be done well. It just has to be, you know, something that you as a reader are going to enjoy. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of Hutt enthusiasts out there that really want to know, especially in light of certain retcons that have come down the line that have kind of shifted what we know about Hutts as a species, mainly Zero the Hutt taking a blaster bolt, for one. I mean, suddenly the skin is not as tough as it used to be. So, you know, I kind of wonder, like, are they going to touch on these kind of things? And I always go to that ponder of the marketing side of things. Like, are we getting this story just to kind of give us a retcon, or is there really going to be more to it? Or are they using this as, like, kill two birds with one stone? We could tie in a retcon here, give a little Hutt history, plus do something else at the same time, you know?
See, I can see myself, you know, I like books like Red Harvest. In fact, I liked Red Harvest a lot more than I liked Death Troopers, mainly because of the fact they didn't force film characters into it. It was in an era that was relatively unexplored, so you didn't have characters returning from somewhere else. I think you bring up a good point, though, when you were talking about how, you know, there's the opening up the era of the Old Republic, for instance, and the gaming community. I think that's one of those places where they're able to reach out. I say there's two ways that they're able to use this bringing in of brand new characters and make it a viable idea going forward. One is the video games. That is to say, do something that is such a big mass market splash out there that it draws people in. You know, you've got characters like those in the Knights of the Old Republic video game series, particularly the first one. It creates enough of a splash to get people wanting to check out that era. You get these similarly named and somewhat loosely related comic book series that can then draw people in. And then you get its own compelling characters like Zane Carrick, Marn, Griff, Hieroglyph, and them. You take something like The Old Republic out there now, and we have books like Deceived, Fatal Alliance that are further dragging people in. Although you have also some weaker stories in there like The Lost Sons. I'm hoping that, what is it, Annihilation, I think it is, that book that's coming out later this year, hopefully will add some depth to Theron, Shan, and Tepet that really wasn't there within the comic series. And
well, you got things let's pause a moment there and talk about that. I mean, because for me, I hear what you're saying, but I saw that series as a setup to something bigger. I mean, you know, we had a lot of, and this is spoiler territory here for the plot of the story, but there were a lot of super weapons going on, and I felt like that was just setting up a lot of the missions for the games and or stories down the road. And I thought it was well done, because one thing Star Wars has overdone time and time again is super weapons. So here back in the past, we have an era where we had a Sith Emperor go ape bonkers for making super weapons. Like, well, no wonder they're everywhere. This guy was like, he went mass media with it and was trying to put it out everywhere. It's like, every system has a super weapon. Now I make sense. So much of Star Wars makes sense now. I don't know.
Well, definitely works from the standpoint of, you know, upping the ante, of course, and that's supposed to be a story that's essentially running parallel to the different character class stories that you can do within the Old Republic game. But, I mean, that means nothing to me personally unless there's some character investment in there. And every single character in there fell flat for me. It's the same reason why I can't get into Dark Times. There may be great things that are going to be happening with the Dark Times comic series, though I doubt it, but I haven't given a crap about a single character in that series since day one. The only
Not
time
even Croc?
I don't care about Croc. He's the Jedi who's there and there and there and there. He escapes from everything, and yet it seems like his existence in and of itself is only to be the one to escape from everything. I mean, I couldn't name a thing that he's done that's been particularly cool other than the fact that he's there and he's got a hat.
Yeah, he does got the cool hat. I mean, I think I like him because we've seen him as a Padawan. And you're right, he is. He's there and there and there. And I'm just waiting to see a book where we get him. I mean, we've had mentions of him in a couple books, you know, and I would just love to see him. I believe it's right after the New Jedi Order series that he joins up with Luke, and yet here in this 9-book series, not one mention of him. I'm just like, come on. Every time I get there, I'm just like, one Kruk mention. I want to know he's in the Order. I mean, come on already.
No, he's an exception, though, to a degree, because he was a character that already existed before Dark Times. But Dark Times has Das Jinnir, for instance, who briefly appeared in Republic. And you got Bomo Greenbark, and you got the crew of the unpronounceable ship, as I always call it. But I'm sorry, these characters I can't feel for them. Nothing about Das makes me give a crap about him. The only time I had an emotional groin pull, as they say, from reading that story was a time when one character's child literally got eaten by another character. At that point, I was like, oh, that's creepy. But that was just a revulsion just from a humanity standpoint. That had nothing to do with the characters themselves. In the current series, what do you have? You've got this thing with him and Ember, and there's a point at which, I guess minor spoiler warning, as if it's a big shock, there's a point at which two characters are asking right around the same time, are you two married? Because you sure act like it. And I think there's supposed to be some kind of emotional connection between the two, and we're supposed to feel something for them and how they feel for each other and act toward each other, but I don't. These characters are completely flat for me, and it's the same kind of thing when dealing with Theron Shan and Tepeth. Nagani Joe, his master, had a little bit more character to him, but they didn't really get a chance to give it as much depth. But the thing I was getting to there was, yes, the video games can get us into, you know, getting into these other storylines because it opens things up. The video games have a bigger mass appeal to a degree than just a standard novel about a previously non-existent character would. So that's a way to get people into it, not using film characters. I would say the other way to do that, though, to make it viable, is to go to an extreme. Like, Tales of the Jedi went gangbusters, you know? Yeah. Dawn of the Jedi is selling out like mad with some of their
Dawn
earlier
issues.
Dawn
of the Jedi is like the only reboot you're ever going to see in Star Wars. I mean, they could go back so far into the past that everything you know about Jedi is completely flipped the script. They're not even Jedi. They're Jedi. they you know, everything they view is totally different. I mean, this is, anybody who's been clamoring for a Star Wars reboot of a kind, this is your reboot series without being a reboot. It's like watching Star Trek.
Kind of, but where I'd go with that, though, is also, you know, you take something like Legacy, you know, further off into the future. Even there, it's tied into the film characters to a degree, but it's mostly a new cast of characters. In those cases, they're so far beyond the time period of the films that anybody reading it, new fans, longtime fans, whatever, you're going to have to learn the rules of the road. You're going to have to learn, what are the Jedi? What is Tython? You're going to have to learn things like, who are Ulic Keldroma and Kay Keldroma? Who is Cade Skywalker? And what is this Sith Empire and this Galactic Alliance remnant that's out there? You kind of have everybody on a somewhat level playing field. Yeah, longtime EU fans have a bit of an advantage. But going into it, the writers have to lay the groundwork for that entire era so you can draw people in. And I think that just the fact that it is so outlandish is what will draw people in. Whoa, the origin of the Jedi? Awesome. Wait, yeah. We're 100 years plus after the movies? Awesome, let's check that out.
Well, you're right, because Cade, in that aspect, he had nothing. There, you know, aside from the few mentions of characters like Obi-Wan and stuff in the past, that was a series that was completely uplifted based off those characters. Yeah, we had kind of a setting of what was going on from the New Jedi Order, but when you think about, you've got Dash Rendar, you've got Kyle Katarn, we've got Jaden Kor, we've got all these characters that came from the games, and yet not that many standalone characters that we've gotten books and stories of didn't come from games, or at least have a background of information from the games. Like, even if you didn't know, you could always go and play Shadows of the Empire and find out what's going on about Dash Rendar, or, you know, any of those other games. You can go out and at least find out about it through that. I mean, there, even though it isn't in a book form, there's a back history to them. Whereas with Zane Carrick, you know, I mean, that was completely fresh territory. Even though we knew that sooner or later it was going to tie into the game, the character himself was completely new. It was more like, how is this going to tie into the game that people were trying to follow? If that makes any sense.
Yeah, and that's why I think those types of eras, the far-flung eras or the game tie-ins, that's less of a concern. You know, you've got that mass market appeal sort of already built into the process. Yeah. I'm more concerned about stuff like, you know, we've gotten to the point now where, I mean, shouldn't Luke and Leia and Han be running around with walkers, you know? Shouldn't Luke be like, use the Force, whippersnapper? I mean,
or at least like the Force tells Luke. And that's something I've always wanted to see. Obi-Wan comes back to Luke. Yoda never does. I've always expected at some point a Force ghost of Yoda basically saying, it is time for you to hand the torch over. No more missions must you go on. Or, you know, something like that where he gets like a Force vision or some kind of feeling that just tells him, no, Jaina, you need to do this. Or no, Ben, you need to take care of this. Or no, you young Jedi Knights, you're the ones that are going to have to do it. The council members need to sit on their laurels, you know.
What's the old thing about, you know, it's not the years, it's the mileage? I mean, these guys have been fighting galactic, galaxy-spanning, republic-building conflicts for decades now. And we've already got a younger generation of characters. Heck, the younger generation of characters from the Young Jedi Knights books, they're being married off, killed off, they're having kids and all kinds of stuff. And yet, the classic trilogy characters, I think because they're worried about the angle of marketing, the angle of viability, the classic trilogy characters still have not been able to recede really into the background. You take Fate of the Jedi, and yes, you've got massive numbers of EU characters in there, like Jaina Solo, and like Jagged Fell, and so forth, and Dala is in there, and all this, but within that group, you'd be hard-pressed to be able to say that they are the main characters. At least to say that they're the main characters beyond the classic trilogy characters. They're on equal footing now.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not the ones spearheading the story. And at some point, that stops being logically viable, which gets them into that area that I'm concerned about, to get us into that territory. I mean, between Fate of the Jedi, or I guess between Mercy Kill, and what we're going to wind up seeing with Legacy, you know, when they finally catch up, in that gap in between there, at some point, it doesn't make sense for the classic trilogy characters to be the forefront anymore. How are they going to tell stories in that era that are going to be viable for new readers and grabbing attention of people who've never read a Star Wars book? Are they going to have to market it as a new era, new Jedi, basically like they did with Legacy? I mean, how can they do that?
that's going to have to be the way. You know, and a lot of people are wondering, like, are they ever going to kill the big three? We all know Lucas has put a kibosh on that. It's not going to happen. You know, it could be something that gets written off screen where they're not there, but they never mention that they're dead or, you know, something like that. Which gets me worried when it comes to the aspect of more books between now and Legacy the comic series. By now, I mean Apocalypse. Post-Apocalypse, what are we going to see? Are we going to get any more books? And if we do, are the big three going to be prominent? As so far, I would say yes. The current marketing model says yes, put them in. Even if they're not there for big, we're going to put them in no matter what. But I'm right there with you. I think that the way to do it is to market it as a new era and let the new characters kind of take the forefront. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to Jaina and Jag and what's going on in the Imperial Remnant, but from what I know from the Legacy comics, to me, logically, at some point, she's going to go with Jag and we're going to see the Imperial Knights created. There is plenty of story opportunity without the big three right there. You want the big three, Jaina makes a call home. Boom, they're in the story without being in the story. They don't have to take up a lot of time. You know, there's multiple ways you could go about this. I mean, but I'm right there with you. I want to see these other characters. I when the New Jedi Order came out, I really was excited. And then, like you said, the characters started dying off. And it was just like, oh, man, because they can't touch the big three, they're going to kill off everyone else that they've gotten you to like? This is not cool. And that has been a big complaint from a lot of people, is that the characters they really like died off and they only felt that they were killed for ratings. You know, I'm not one to take that stance typically, but I am enjoying the way that the characters died for the most part. And these characters I'm talking in this case, Anakin Solo, Ganna Riso, Jason Solo, I enjoyed his death, but I didn't really care for the journey to the death. I loved that character up until Dark Nest, and Dark Nest, some went wrong by the time that series ended, and Denning just kind of ran with it in a way that I'm just like, scratching my head. I still haven't quite figured out what in the heck happened. He seemed like this really cool rogue Jedi, and suddenly he went from rogue to dark. And it was like, why does rogue have to be dark? I don't know. I just don't get it. I'm a rogue myself, and I don't see myself completely dark. I like the dark arts, but I'm not committed to them.
I think the whole idea that, you know, you can't kill off the main characters, I mean, that is a very limiting thing, like you're saying. I mean, you can't kill off those. I'm not sure that that means you got to kill off others. But, you know, realistically, at some point, these folks have to outrun their luck. You know, at some point. We know that Luke is dead by the time of Legacy because we've seen his Force ghost. But that's it. You know, at some point, don't these characters have to run out of time? But obviously, they're not going to do anything with that, at least not right now, because they're worried about, you know, the ramifications of it. Lucas has put the kibosh on it, as you said, so they can't do it. You take, though, another idea of one of these time periods that is in the middle, you know, between something far-flung and something that is much more familiar. We have the time period between Fate of the Jedi and Legacy. We also have the time period now between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. And in that case, it's almost the same thing. The prequels were somewhat one of these far-flung eras because Lucas introduced a lot of new characters, and it's a time period that he'd made off-limits to the Bantam-era publishing stuff. But now in between, most of the characters that we know of from the Clone Wars, most of them have tended to be Jedi. They're, most of them are gone. We're going to talk at some point about how, you know, the last of the Jedi will you be is a load of crap, given how many Jedi are apparently still out there and working with the Rebellion. But you have that time period where most of our focal point characters are gone, or in hiding on Tatooine. It leaves you essentially with Darth Vader and maybe some of the clones that we've seen before, and that entire Dark Times era is opened up, but at the same time, it lacks some of those touchstone characters. The only stories we seem to be getting in that era tend to be focused around Vader. And then they just kind of take these other characters that so far don't have a lot of emotional buildup, Dark Times or whatever, and lump them all in there around Vader. I would argue that that era is one that it seems like they either have or are going to have trouble, again, marketing. I mean, Luke is on Tatooine. He's a kid. You can't use him. Leia as a young senator or with Bail, maybe. Han and Chewie's earlier adventures, those have, to a degree, already been covered by the Han Solo trilogy and then the Han Solo adventures, and now we're getting other stuff in the lead-up to A New Hope being thrown in there, like him showing up in Agent of the Empire. Isn't that another era where viability comes into question?
Well, yeah, and like when we said in our cramming episode, the big three between episode 4 and 5 is the most crammed. But yet, and you just mentioning Vader, I'm surprised we didn't talk about Vader post episode 3. I mean, Vader is going to be one of those guys that we're going to see him, that character, shoehorned. Not just the time frame, but him. I mean, he's going to be in every mission. I mean, it's like, you know, single-handedly, he wiped out the Jedi. So he must be in every single mission. So Vader is not going to have a chance to do anything. He's in a suit, so he doesn't need to.
I mean, that's the thing, because he's the one major focal character we've got left in that time period. And I think that's what Star Wars is going to start to run into, because, I mean, we've been seeing publishing, at least in its current form, you know, in the modern EU since 1991. It's now 2012. We had a few things being published early on relative to now. It's few, you know, 107-plus comics for Marvel is a few, at least compared to Dark Horse's giant run now. I mean, we've seen stuff being printed in Star Wars since 76, with a giant gap in there except for the role-playing game. But it just kind of seems as though we've got to the point where so much cramming has happened, not just in certain time periods, but you can almost say that cramming happens in a year-to-year basis. I mean, you look at the Bantam era, almost every year of the post-Return of the Jedi era, especially once you get past the X-Wing novels, pretty much every year once you get to about Courtship of Princess Leia, there's some giant crisis brewing that Han, Leia, Luke, and them are having to deal with.
Yeah.
And now you look at the prequel era, and it's like right before Phantom Menace, and a little bit afterwards, and then all throughout the Clone Wars, especially now that we have two versions of the Clone Wars going on, all being crammed in there. It's like we've got to a point where so much storytelling has been done, and a lot of it's been very, very good, but so much storytelling has been done, it's almost like they've closed themselves off, painted themselves into a corner where some of the only eras, unless they go far-flung, that are open, are those eras in which you would have to make this predominantly about non-film, non-Clone Wars cartoon, perhaps even non-video game characters. And I don't know how you market that. I mean, we're talking about how there are great characters in there. Jason, back before he went dark and got deaded. I mean, you take all these different characters, there's great potential there. And we talked in our
Zek and Blood Oath. I mean, there was a book that was canceled that lots of fans were just banging their fists. Why? No! I mean, I wanted to know more. I mean, Fate of the Jedi has done a somewhat good job of giving you backstory as to what might have happened in that book. But, you know, something that you're talking about makes me think about Ahsoka is a prime example of how you go about this. I mean, she's not a film character per se. I mean, she is because the film that kicked off the series went to theater, but she's also George Lucas, so she's a G-level canon character, but she was created after the fact. So there's a whole backstory to her now that we're wondering about. And same thing with Darth Maul. I mean, now that we know he's not dead, it's kind of like, well, where does this character go now? These, in a sense, are ways that you're able to revitalize what you thought was a written story. You know, well, we know that they're past, or, you know. It's Ahsoka, especially, one that I come back to. It's like, I see so much potential with that character because of the fact that she kind of just sprung out of nowhere. You know, it's like, okay, so how are they going to work her out? I mean, there was never a reference to her before, so obviously her death's going to have to be something where Anakin just kind of like writes her completely out of his life. I don't know. I mean, I overthink things. But I mean, I think that's a way you can go about it, by introducing characters as they've done in the Clone Wars. I mean, in the flip side of things, the Clone Wars has done a good job of bringing EU fans in, like bringing Voss and other characters that were from the EU only into that realm to get people to come and see. I mean, some are coming with the aspect of like, what's going to be messed up now? And then there's others that are like really actually genuinely excited all the way around to see a meshing of the two.
I'm totally with you there on that one. Okay, I actually have said that now I appreciate Ahsoka as a character in her own right now that we've gotten to about season 3 and 4 of the Clone Wars. Yeah. She annoyed me. Her existence as a continuity error walking around and saying, Sky Guy, that drove me crazy at first. But she has grown on me as a character, and you're right. That is something where, just like if it was in a video game or anything else, she's been presented out there to a broader audience, and now we can tell more stories with her, either during the Clone Wars, before the Clone Wars perhaps, while she's not a Padawan just yet, and maybe if they come up with some way for her to survive, we can tell stories with her set afterwards, and it still draws people in. But
yeah,
still,
I mean, I like her character stories the most, because I used to think the Clone Wars was too Obi-Wan and Anakin eccentric, especially since we had two versions of them. And, you know, with her coming in, it was like, oh, we can have an episode that focuses on her with the clones, you know, and we can start to see that side of things. So it's like we could still get our Clone Wars actions without having to choke on Obi-Wan and Anakin every single episode. I mean, it's not like there's a problem with them, but it was nice to have that refreshing break.
But see, that's the thing. That's the Clone Wars. That's the cartoon series that Lucas is putting out there. So it makes perfect sense that she can be a gateway character to get more people into reading more stuff if she's in more stuff. But you take all these other characters, or these other eras, you know, Jason, Jaina, Zek, Raynar, or go back a little bit earlier, go to prequel era characters or pre-prequel era characters. Go back to one set during maybe the Tales of the Jedi time, whatever. There aren't TV series in there. Lucas isn't even talking about making TV series in there, and there's no games apparently forthcoming. Heck, from what I can tell, there aren't any Star Wars games forthcoming except for, at this point, I guess it's tomorrow as of the time we're recording this, Kinect Star Wars, which I don't even want to talk about. It's fun to be in the Empire today. Burn it. But no, there are no gateways. How do you... Introducing Ahsoka is a perfect example of how you can use the television series or something outside of the live-action films to introduce another character and make it into something that you can grow from. But how do you do that with all the other time periods and all these other characters when all you've got are the books and the comics, and the whole point is to get people to buy them? I mean, I'm not going to buy a book because it's got Jaina in it unless I know who on earth Jaina is. You know what I mean? It's a chicken and the egg kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's... I think that was, for me, the hard part of, like Rebel Alliance. Fatal Alliance, I mean. Not Rebel Alliance. Old Republic, Fatal Alliance. That book, for me, it was okay. You know, and I see it as okay because I was like, I didn't know anything about the characters, and I'm really waiting for more details about what's going on in the backstory to go back and reread it and really enjoy it more, because I felt like there was a lot going on, but because I didn't have that backstory, I was kind of like, all right, okay.
And you're a fan, though. So take on, like, get rid of the Old Republic label. Okay? Just put out a Star Wars book with that premise, take off the Old Republic label, give it a cool name, give it a cool cover. Characters we know nothing about, care nothing for at that point. How do you market something like that? I mean, I'm not trying to be the Debbie Downer to this. I'm sure I basically am, or I guess whatever the male version is of Debbie.
Well, you're going to have
Dobson Downer.
You're going to have to do a trailer, in a sense. I mean, you're going to have to, like they do with the Zero episodes in the comics, especially for Legacy and for the Tor games and all these older comics, Dawn of the Jedi. They give you zeros and a 0.5 to kind of flesh out the backstory before you even get there. And that, I think, is essential. If you don't give them that little bit of backstory, or at least a trailer that's presented in such a way that you really kind of want to dwell into it. I mean, recently on the Star Wars Report, we were talking about Hunger Games, and the trailers for me didn't sell it. But yet I go to the Wikipedia, and the plot of the story was enough to make me want to see it. But I was just like, man, the trailer just failed at selling it. But you were talking about using the X-Wing books as a TV series. Oh my, George Lucas. Could you imagine a TV series set with Rey Squadron, for example? It'd be like the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, only Star Wars. I could just see them taking that dreadnought, modifying it, and going out and fighting off the Imperial Warlord of the Month kind of thing. And like you said, that was a series that took a character that was from the films and made him a fan favorite. I mean, everybody out there knows who Wedge Antilles is. And EU fans, most of them love him. And if you've read the X-Wing books, it's hard not to. And I think that's where a lot of the Wedge love comes from, is those that have fallen through the Rogue Squadron to Rey Squadron books and seen who that character became. And for me, that's part of the fun of this whole ride. Okay, Jacen Solo, Wedge Antilles. Those are two perfect examples of, if you haven't read every kind of story of their existence going up from the movies on up until the point where you're at in Fate of the Jedi, especially in Legacy of the Force, okay, that series, Legacy of the Force, was a very shallow series. If you had not that back information, it was not as deep as it was for someone who did. I really enjoyed it, as much as I hated seeing what happened to Jacen, the character, and it was what some people will call a derailment of his character. I enjoyed seeing it because I had witnessed where he had came. Granted, at times I was kind of like, oh, why is he doing this? And a lot of people were like, he wouldn't do it again. He learned his lesson. But I'm sorry. In the real world out there, sometimes you learn a lesson more than once. Sometimes you forget about the lessons that you learned. And I thought that was an example of what we were seeing. And to me, that was the fun of the overall ride of the EU. I mean, when I first started, I was so overwhelmed, and I remember so many of the Bantam era books, and I was just skipping parts of the wording because I didn't understand what a dreadnought was exactly, and it was like I was getting so hung up on that I was really not enjoying it. And so I started buzzing through parts of the books. I remember like skipping like whole chunks when I first read it. I had to go back and reread it because I was like, okay, I missed half of like the story because I was jumping past most of the political stuff. I didn't like that at the time. But then I came to realize that that stuff was integral to the overall part of the story, that if I was skipping that, I was completely confused later. And when I went back and reread it, I enjoyed it more because I had the added information. And that, to me, has been the fun of it. And I think that, like I said, with these eras that are too far in the future and the past, they give you these zeros, the 0.5s, to give you that integral information, the trailer, if you will.
Yeah, I remember the trailers, as you say that. You know, the trailer, for me, was the one that really got my attention was getting me psyched up for the new Jedi Order. Because, I mean, it was Mark Hamill coming back and doing a voiceover as Luke, you know?
Yeah.
I had fought the worst of all wars. I'd seen the redemption of evil. I'd seen balance restored to the Force, but et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Light can turn to darkness as it did when I was born, or whatever it is that he says. I mean, that kind of thing is interesting, but you're still dealing with the film characters as the touchstone for the new Jedi Order.
Well, and Death Troopers did something similar, too, where they had fan trailers that generated a lot of hype for it.
Right. You need something to get attention. Which I guess if to boil down the concern, I guess, if Lucas is not going to create something himself that is taking in some of these other eras to launch off characters, if we don't have video games coming from these different eras to help launch off and bring these characters to the minds of gamers out there, and if we're not going to have every single book, every single comic have to have the big three or characters from the prequels or characters from the Clone Wars, then aren't we facing the idea that Star Wars is going to have to start relying on other characters as primary characters, and unless there's some way to get those characters some attention, aren't we facing the idea that slowly but surely EU fans will keep reading, new fans will stop coming in because it won't be as accessible. It's already pretty inaccessible now, and eventually as those fans, those EU fans, either stop reading, grow out of it, or eventually pass away of old age, that just the natural outgrowth of this is that the Star Wars expanded universe as a continuity dwindles and dwindles and dwindles until it stops. Isn't that the natural outgrowth of just so much being printed with so many of the same characters and the difficulty of presenting new characters to a mass audience?
There's definite truth to what you say. I mean, I think about how, you know, a lot of fans have come to see post-New Jedi Order as a failure. And I'm seeing that more and more. And the thing that concerns me, because I love that end of the era, is that it seems to be a popular opinion, even with the publishing aspects. Like they talk about how they're never going to do another book series as big as the New Jedi Order. And I scream, why? That was a great series. I mean, you look at it, it wasn't a 19-book series. It was a era that was pushed as a series. You know, they always talk about it being an era, but it was standalones, duologies, trilogies. And they did a good job of tying all these authors in and having a plot point from point one to point two all the way to the end. I remember thinking that my big complaint was that the Vong got easier to kill. But then I started to watch World War II videos where in the Pacific, the Americans were fighting the Japanese. And the original pilots that started in the war all kamikaze themselves. So the skilled pilots on the Japan side were less and less. And so the pilots, the skill level of the pilots as the war went on, were easier to shoot down. And to me, that kind of made sense with the Vong because they were doing a very similar thing. And yet, then we get to the later series where we went with Denning doing a three-book series, which kind of worked, but Denning, to me, I really felt like the ball was dropped in the last book of that series. And then we went to a book series where we had three authors, and they want to stick with those same three authors into the next series. I would have at least switched up the lineup. Some, when they went to that...
Well, you had to switch up the lineup because Travis quit.
Well, yeah, there was that too. But yeah, even though she quit, they just slipped the new author right there where she was. They didn't move Denning up to the middle author or Alston to the end. None of that. And they could have. You know, and for me, Legacy of the Force felt like, especially when we had Karen there, it felt like the authors weren't cooperating. They weren't working together. That there was definite dragging of feet where one person's story plot was completely left alone, i.e. Karen having the Mandalorian plot and no one else picking up on that, you know. And I come from the aspect of it was very frustrating because I want to know more about that. And other people come at it from, well, only Karen did it because nobody cares about those characters. So I was like, that to me is part of what you didn't see in the New Jedi Order. You know, when something was mentioned in a book, say one or two, it was again picked up about or mentioned as the thing went on, and it all kind of bled together. There was a definite feeling of we know what's going on. Whereas with these books, heck, Abelus, we didn't even know what was going on with that character until the series was halfway over.
Well, hey, don't worry about it, because apparently the authors didn't know who Abeloth was until at least halfway through writing the series, according to their interview in Insider. We'll talk about that when we do our Fate of the Jedi retrospective.
That's where I'm getting to, though. It's like, and yet now the popular public opinion is that the big series were a failure. It's like, no, the big series was a hit. It was the way that they changed the way they marketed it and the way they planned it that was the failure.
I don't know. I just, like I said, I don't want to be the Debbie or the Doug or whatever downer it is this time. I just want people to understand, because I'm sure I'm coming off as the negative one again.
Probably concerned.
Concerned. I love this series. Okay, I love the Star Wars saga. I have grown up with it, and from the time that I was in, I guess it was middle school or late elementary school, I've been reading the EU, and I am heavily invested in it from an emotional standpoint, from a fandom standpoint, from a financial standpoint. I mean, we're talking about getting yet another bookshelf for all these books and everything, and it's a saga that I've loved to see grow, but with that, I think, comes the passion. It's the same thing that when I got the chance to write for Tales, we had Jeremy Barlow say, look, you know, you may be speaking out negatively against Dark Horse, because it was back when Dark Horse was having all their troubles with getting issues out on time and all the copy editing errors inside it and everything. But the fact that you're concerned about it shows that you care, and that's important. You know, I am concerned about the viability going forward with some of these eras and some of these characters if they don't change up the way they deal with it. And I don't see an answer. And I don't feel like I'm seeing an answer coming from Del Rey or Dark Horse. Dark Horse, you know, uses the zero issues, and Dark Horse has a publishing line that you, where you can kind of cross-advertise and such, but I don't really see that going, especially with Del Rey, you know, with hardly any Star Wars games on the horizon that we've heard about. I mean, I've heard about virtually none, except for just updates to ones that are already out there. It just kind of feels as though it's a worry. It's something I see looking forward as a potential problem, but it kind of feels like it's not being addressed. I mean, it's kind of like when our government is spending massive amounts of money and we get a lot of talk about what's going to happen going forward, but both parties have driven the deficits up like crazy. I mean, there's a whole thing about how, you know, President George W. Bush, when he was in office, raised our deficit for one given year to the absolute record that it had ever been. And you tell that to a Democrat, they say, man, see that Bush? He's a problem. And then you turn around and say, okay, well, yeah, but President Obama, in his first year of office, I think it was first or second, tripled that deficit amount for that year. To which the Republicans say, yeah, see, that Obama, bad guy. You're both screwing it up. and it's that kind of thing. Like, we're so worried about the, you know, it's like not seeing the forest for the trees. We've got all these smaller issues that are being dealt with now. You know, what's this year's publishing going to be? What's next year's publishing going to be? You know, can we get this issue out on time? Will this novel come out on time? And I think that bigger picture, that question of where do we go from here? Can Star Wars as a saga survive in EU publishing, at least, without a reboot or something? You know, can it survive another 10 years, another 20 years? You know, am I going to be seeing my children, if I have children, are they going to be reading new Star Wars novels up until the time they're my age? Or is this finally going to come to a halt? And if there's a problem that's going to bring it to a halt, and we don't want it to, shouldn't that be something that's being addressed? And this seems like one of those things that's just sort of flying over the heads of everybody out there. So consider this an impassioned fan caring about where this is going, and trying to attack an issue that at this point I see no answer for, and I see no answers forthcoming for.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you do, you know, worry about where it's going to end up going. You know, I'm one of those, I like Kruk. I want Kruk stories. There's definite places in the timeline, more than enough places to tell the stories, but the key is keeping the interest there. You know, maybe we need to see a change in the publishing lineup. You know, we get these nine book series, and again, people complained about the length of the book series. Well, maybe it's the length of the time that we're putting them out. Maybe we shouldn't even be talking about these books until we're five books written and publish them, so by the time that the last book gets written, they all come out within a year of each other versus 4 years and stuff. I mean, for me, that's been the hard part, is jumping from one book series to another and back to the next one again and getting right back to where I was. You're almost better off to wait until the book series is done and then jump in it right there and read it all at once. I think you'd enjoy it better. I mean, you know, it's definitely one of those things where like you said, the concern about something we are passionate about is there. I mean, we definitely love it and we are going to accept whatever comes. But the question is how are they going to attack this problem or this concern? Because whether or not it's just me and you having this concern, I think the concern is a legitimate concern. You know, being in the fandom as often as we are, we've seen lots of long-term fans die by the wayside, you know, and over issues that just were never really addressed. And I think that, you know, we get posts out there like the April Fool's Day one where you know, they hint about things that they know that fandom has had issues with. And yet at the same time, we see things like the nice little Infinity's tale of Luke Skywalker, which I thought was just great. I mean, so again, you know, there's potential out there for entertaining the fans. They just got to capitalize it. And they can show us time and again that they can. But it is nice to know and be reassured every now and again that there is a plan going forward. I mean, when you hear things like, well, we didn't even know what we were going to do with Ableth, you do kind of get concerned. It's like, well, this is, if this series is a complete failure, then obviously they're going to stop writing this end of the story and focus on another one. And for me, that's not something I would like to see.
Amen. So I guess as we close out here, since we already did tell you how to contact us, hopefully you'll let us know your thoughts on this issue, and I guess I'll just leave with the, well, at least if we don't ever get an answer to this question, we can live by that old maxim from, I guess one of the characters in Wall Street, I think it was, you know, with Michael Douglas and Charlie Sheen before he went crazy, the line, enjoy it while you can, because it never does. You just sit back and enjoy the saga while it lasts, because we have no idea where this is going to end up. No one can predict that.
That's right. And remember, you can find our show at www.starwarsreport.com, as well as our Facebook page, iTunes, Zune, and airing on Middle Earth Network Radio. If you like our show, be sure to drop us a review on iTunes or the Zune Marketplace, or just fire us off an email. You can email us at beyondthefilms@starwarsfanworks.com. And be sure to interact with us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find that at @SWBeyondFilms. So once again, this has been Mark Herleman.
And Nathan Butler.
And, oh yeah, Whistler's been here the whole time too. He's kind of been just chilling. And, you know, once again, we're thanking you for listening. And may the Force be with you. And don't quote us the odds.